Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
For being with us wherever you are and whenever you are, because lots of people listen to the recording. And we have people in, I think, 89 countries listening to the show, which is so exciting. So cool. My guest tonight is Patty Fivett, who wrote the book Making of a Mystic and is going to talk about writing as a form of spiritual emergence. And I'm very excited to talk to her. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And how can I talk about anything but spring? It's amazing out there. I don't know how it is where you are. And you could be in a part of the world where it's you're starting the fall and winter. But here in New England, we've got springtime. And there is a point in springtime where the flowers are the trees are starting to bloom. And some of them have flowers. Some of them have the tiny green leaves. And it looks like a Monet painting. It looks like somebody took a brush and painted a bright dot where each of those bits of color is. And if you happen to be driving just the right way so the sun is behind it, it's absolutely spectacular. And the world changes. The shape of the world changes. As the leaves come in, things that you were looking at all winter, neighbors' houses perhaps, disappear. And there's all this beautiful green foliage, and the whole shape of the space that you live in changes, a lot like how in the wintertime here, the snow reshapes the space. But the thing that always stands out to me in watching springtime is the diversity of the plant life. You know, it's not that every tree is the same species and they all come out at the same time and look the same way and the leaves are the same. No, we have an incredible range of trees of all different shapes and sizes and different colors of flowers that come out. The leaves are different shapes. They bud and flower and leaf out at different times, and it's part of what makes it all spectacular. It'll get a little more boring during the summertime when everything is dark green, but right now you can really see how different all of them are. And that's really what this planet is about. This is a planet of incredible diversity. And we know so little about it. We know very little about the species in the ocean, for example, but certainly places like the Amazon, where most of the diversity on this planet is, we know very, very little about the animals and the plants there. We're just scratching the surface. So much to learn, so much to know. And what strikes me is that human beings have this really strange way of not acknowledging that human beings have the same diversity. Somehow, the same creator that created all of this diversity in nature spread us out however it happened. Spread us out all over the planet. We landed in different places, adapted to them in different ways, developed different cultures, and developed different religions and different creation stories and different ways of saying, here we are, we know that there's a creator, and we have to make sense of this. And if you are open to listening to all the different ways that men have tried to understand that experience, it's amazing. What's also amazing is that there are threads that are exactly the same stories and they talk about the exact same energies, or if they give them names, deities, all over the world. In one part of the world, there's a god or a goddess. And in the Western world, that same being with the same energy and the same story is an archangel. Same thing. What they're saying is it's everybody found the same stuff. They just gave it different names depending on what their culture was. Somehow, what we're watching right now in particular, various groups have decided that their way of understanding all this is the only way that is acceptable, and they will hurt or kill anybody who looks at it any other way, came up with a different story, has a different culture. And we're watching groups here in the United States who are saying that, and we're watching groups in the Middle East that are saying that, and they're looking at each other and pointing fingers and saying, we're both wrong. It's like, yes, you're both wrong for the same reason, in the same way. This is a planet of diversity, and what we need to do is accept the wonderful diversity of our brothers and sisters and figure out how to do what every religion says, which is love one another. Every religion says the same thing. And what do? We fight. So someday we'll figure it out. And that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And now we get to have some fun with my guest, Patty Fivette. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. And I thoroughly enjoyed that particular metaphysical musing.
Thanks. Every spring it hits me, and I happen to live in a place where it's spectacular in the springtime and the fall. And it's striking to me that diversity is frightening to so many people. It just makes no sense to me. So like so many people that are on the show, you have gone on a path of mysticism and learned all kinds of things that you never thought you were going to do. And the first thing I always ask people is, what was the story? How did you wind up doing all of this? How did it all unfold?
I never intended to do any of it.
I totally understand that.
No, I really never intended to have such a metaphysical experience. But my life just was not working. Where do you turn when there's nowhere else to go? Where do you go when you're not sure you want to even stay on this planet, live any longer? Where do you go when your role as motherhood has changed because your children have left home? What do you do when you don't know what you're supposed to do? Where do you go when you're depressed and afraid and can't leave the house except to get groceries and then run back? Where do you go when the marriage you've had for 30, 32 years has died? What do you do? What mm-hmm. I ended up doing, what started all this, was getting on my knees in a thunderstorm and with every ounce of power in my body from the cellular level on up, I said in prayer, whatever is stopping me from my spiritual path, may it fall from me. Oh, my goodness. The listeners out there want to do that? And
careful
with
what
one
you ask
and
for.
Love with an ease because... It was quite a ride. That's how it got started. Within 3 months, I was at a lawyer's office. Within a year, I had left home. And that's how, believe it or not, that's how my intuitive metaphysical experience started. But let's get more specific, David, because the book is Making of a Mystic. Writing is a form of spiritual emergence. Mm-hmm. I was not a writer. I had never written before except for essays in college or themes and papers and that type thing. I couldn't even have told you what the word metaphysics meant, although I was a very intuitive child. But it was put away in childhood for lack of validation.
Right.
So there I was, midlife. I'd said my declaration on my knees in a thunderstorm, and life began to change. I felt one day, like I had to go hear Carolyn Mace, as she was about an hour, it would have been an hour and a half drive for me. I didn't have problems being in the car, so I could get there and drive. But because I wasn't sure if I could stay in an auditorium by myself, a massage therapist friend and one of his clients were going, and I said, may I sit with you? And that was fine. So I was able to get there. I was able to get in. And I tell this in more detail in the book, Making of a Mystic. But I was able to get in, and I sat down. And the auditorium was filled. Maybe 1,000 people. There could have been 2,000. It was or more. It was packed. It's one of the bigger places in Atlanta, the Omni. And so it was packed. And while Carolyn Mace was very good at what she did, I sat there and wondered why I was there. But in the middle of it, right before break in the first session that morning, I had a grand panic attack, a grand mal panic attack. It was one of my worst ones. I ran outside, stood over a bridge waiting for a train to come so I could jump. I was totally out of my senses. Mm. The massage therapist came out. He got me. He brought me back in. And I tell that to the listeners so they will know that what has happened in my experiences did not happen because I had some special gift or was trained along these lines. It happened because I was in trouble and I didn't know what else to do, and I opened it. I surrendered to spirit. And that's really important. Anyway, the massage that got me back inside, the lady sitting on my right, I call her Dr. Maria in the book, said, "You're having a panic attack." I didn't know who this lady was. "Turn your back to me." And she hit some acupressure points up and down while I did some breathing. And as per her instructions, guess what? The panic attack was gone, totally gone. I said, "Who are you and what do you do?" She said, "You're having a panic attack because you're allergic to the perfume for the lady sitting in front of you. I'm an allergy intuitive, and I can help you through energetic treatment get rid of this." So I thought, well, while Carolyn Mace was wonderful, my being led to go was to meet Dr. Maria.
Yep.
And I don't like that, carve that in stone. So after several, my life began to change. I began to go to the grocery store without problems. I could walk down the detergent aisle without wigging out, you know. And life slowly began to change as the divorce was finishing and I began to figure out who I was and what I was about. Dr. Maria, one day, Maria said she was having an intuition course for one of her studies, and it was going to be at her house, and she needed 12 people. She only had 11. Don't know anything about intuition. I'm not sure I need to be there. She was insistent, but when she bribed me with a couple of free treatments, I thought, okay, you got it. I'll follow my money. So, so David, I went, and I walked in, and there were 11 of the most intuitive ladies I have ever met in my life in one room. And they acted like it was the most normal thing in the world. And to me, it felt scary, and they didn't teach it in church, so I wasn't sure it was what I was supposed to be doing. But right. There I was. Tina was the instructor, and Tina said, led us through different exercises for 2 or 3 days, I forget how long it was, for the weekend. And she taught us how to go into altered state. We did different readings for each other and role played. We just a whole lot of different exercises to help us open up our intuition. What surprised me was that I could keep up with the other ladies. I was right there with them, and I thought, "This is what is this about?" My intuition was opening up. Later, I asked Dr. Maria why she asked me to come, and she said she realized. She was also a psychologist and has her doctorate in energy medicine and Chinese medicine. But anyway, Dr. Maria had said that she realized my intuition had been put away as a child, and she thought it would be beneficial. Oh, was she right? Mm-hmm. So the last exercise of the last day brings us to our story. Tina had said, the instructor said, go to a quiet place in Dr. Maria's house, and take your tablet, your pencil and paper, a pen and yellow legal tablet is what I had. Sit in a corner or sit somewhere, get comfortable, go into the altered state, but right before you do, write a question at the top of your page. And something that has bothered you all your life. I thought, okay, what's supposed to happen about this? And she said she had told us that you will possibly get a vision, maybe you will hear words, maybe you will have a drawing, maybe you will just have an inner knowing, but be open to however it comes, because we all have different talents and different ways of receiving. So I went, and reluctantly, and sat in the corner of a bedroom with my legs crossed like I would imagine a Sufi mystic would be who knew what they were doing, although I didn't think I did. And I wrote at the top of my paper, David, why do I never feel good enough? That's a question that was sort of at the core of a lot of problems I was having, and I don't think it's that unusual for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But that's what I wrote. And so I went into my altered state. I followed my breath. I began to watch my breath. It kept my brain, my thoughts quieter. And as I was watching my breath, my hand that was in my right hand that was holding the pen wrote at the top of the page. Then it began to write at the bottom of the page. It wrote in the middle of the page. I was not aware of what was being written, but I was aware that it was writing. I was the observer, and I did not try to stop the observing because something was happening. One of my ways of receiving spirit is through the feeling state, not touch, but feeling. I'm an empath. And so I could feel the vibration in the, from what was from the experience, and it felt very special, and that's all I've realized. But anyway, by the time my hand stopped writing, my whole legal tablet was filled with words. And, I started crying. It was special. What had happened? It felt special. But I still hadn't read it. Tina came to gut me, and she said, "It's okay, Patty. If nothing happened, you can practice again." And I looked at her through bawling, rasping breath, and I said, "But Tina, you don't understand. It did happen. Something out there loved me enough and cared enough about me to answer my question. I've never experienced anything like that." And she said, "Read it to me." Well, when I read it to her, she was quite touched, and she said, "I want you to read it to the group." And when I read it to the group, six immediately wanted copies of it, and three were crying. So this is how it started. It didn't start by me saying I'm going to experience automatic writing or I'm going to open up my intuition. It started by complete surrender, open-hearted, loving surrender. And that's how it started.
And suddenly there you were with a new way of accessing, whether you call it intuition or spirit or...
Yeah, spirit. I called it automatic writing. I didn't know what that was at the time, but it is automatic writing. It was just what I have described. It's your hand takes on a life of its own, and it writes. And well, it happened once. I got home, and I thought, could it happen again?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, could it really happen again? And so I had to get my own thoughts out of the way with that and just open up to the experience, not force the experience, because that would have been different. But open up to the experience. It's not something I was doing. It was something I was allowing. And that's a really important point. So I went into the altered state again, wrote another question at the top of the page, and the next thing I know, there it was happening. And so I kept doing that. It was like spiritual psychology 101.
Mm-hmm.
I was asking, why am I afraid of this? I asked, what is God? I asked, and all these things are in the book, Making of a Mystic. And I asked, what is a soul? Is it something I have? Is it something I am? I asked about meditation. I asked about purpose. I said, well, when my turn comes, what is my life about anyway? Then I talked about, learned about the important journey we all take. I asked about truth. I grew. It was better than any psychology sessions I'd ever had, and it was also better than any church experience I had ever had.
Mm-hmm.
This was personal. And one of them was, how can I connect to you, God? How can I get closer? It was life lessons 101. And as these things continued, I wondered if I could, it began to evolve. And I wondered if I could do it on the computer. And so I would cover up the computer screen. I can type without looking at what I'm at the keyboard. And I covered up the computer screen and basically did the same process. And it continued that way, but it was as if I had heard a whisper or heard the thought or felt the thought. And my hands knew exactly what to type. So you see, it's evolving. It went from me not knowing what was written to me being aware what was being written. It was like it was coming through me and not from me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept going like that until I had many, many of them. And then it switched again as I began to grow my vibrational essence. I thought we're all vibrational beings. And as I began to grow and understand and get rid of a lot of my issues and blocks through this question and answer writing sessions, my vibrations began to grow, and I began to see everything as one. I began to realize that everything is spirit, but I did not know that it would continue in that way. So one day I was waiting outside Dr. Maria's office, and on the outskirts of Atlanta, Georgia, there were two huge oak trees, well over hundreds of years, and just huge. And I thought, well, I'll go do a question and answer session under one of the trees. It was so mm-hmm. pretty, and her office was just so small, and she had several people in there waiting. So I thought, well, I'll just go sit under the tree. And so I sat, and I wrote at the top of my paper, I'm sitting under an oak tree by the side of the road, and I described the tree a little bit, and I think, I wonder what spirit has to tell me today. And this is in another section of my book. I did learn, but I did learn from the perspective of the spirit that lives in the tree, or is the tree, or mm-hmm. from the spirit that is God expressing God's self as a tree. And it took my lessons further, David. It took my lessons from being spiritual psychology 101. It took it into the realm of how to live on this earth with other people and respecting nature and how we respect each other, and very much like what you were talking about earlier in your metaphysical musings. Lessons very much like that. And I have several from different trees in a whole section. The first section when I was doing the question and answer would be one or two paragraphs, never more than two pages. The tree answers would be several pages long, and it was like they would be in story form.
Mm-hmm.
So I continued that way for a while. And
well,
it was quite special.
As the saying goes, welcome to my world. That's what shamans do, is assume that everything is conscious and communicate with it and ask,
yeah,
what do you have to tell me today?
Well, that's exactly what I'm telling you, because it moved from trees I went to a cabin in the mountains and was sitting on the porch and had pen and paper in hand, and the next thing I knew, I was writing poetry.
Mm-hmm.
The leaves, it was fall, and the leaves were wonderful. They were, I think one line is, the leaves and crimson hallelujahs and fall to the floor and crispy applause for life, you know, that type thing.
Mm-hmm.
The bird next to it. And for the listeners who are not familiar with this, it's not that I'm hearing words from the bird or from the trees. It's like I am the law of attraction. My vibrational essence, my spirit appreciates and loves the spirit of the bird, appreciates and loves the spirit of the leaves, appreciates and loves the spirit of the stream as it goes by. We are one. It was oneing. It was an experience of mm-hmm. one. And when you get to that level of attraction, that level of oneness, it doesn't come out, at least for me, it doesn't come out in sentences. It transcends that, and it comes in phrases, and it comes out like poetry.
It is amazing.
It is, isn't it?
Yes.
It's fascinating.
We're going to go to a break in a minute, and I want to make sure people know how to find you online. So why don't you give your website?
Okay, www. And then it's my name, PADDYFIEVET.com, PaddyFivette.com.
Fantastic. So I want to hear the rest of the story and talk a little bit about this mystical shamanic experience, because that's very much part of my experience, and I'd love to kick it around with you. We will, and what I always say is, we'll be back shortly unless we get taller. Here on Empower Radio, my guest is Patty Fivette, the author of Making of a Mystic. And we will be back in just a minute. Don't go nowhere.
A cat, and have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the Insta-Do. Just imagine, you just put it over your head, like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side, then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Patty Fivette, whose book is Making of a Mystic, Writing as a Form of Spiritual Emergence. And I just wanted to mention that I'm really happy you used the term spiritual emergence, which was popular for a while, spiritual emergency and spiritual emergence. There was a spiritual emergence network, and then it kind of dissipated.
Spiritual emergence is exactly what I was going through, what I was experiencing. And although the term is not used as much anymore, it still works for what the experience was. I was emerging into from the person I thought I was into the person that I am.
Right. And it always starts with a crisis.
It always does. And sometimes the spiritual growth is so fast, as you know, is so fast and comes at you in so many different ways that it almost becomes a spiritual emergency. It can be very confusing. It's extremely intense in many ways.
Right. And a lot of people are lost in it and scare the people around them and wind up in psych hospitals and medicated. Which breaks the cycle of being able to go through what you need to go through to get to the good stuff.
It really does. I knew better than to tell people I was close to that, oh, I talk to trees. I knew better than to say that. But those that understand would understand that it's a oneness, and you bond with the tree, and you open your heart, and spirit just shares.
Yeah, and one of my teachers was a Cherokee medicine man, and I had various experiences with trees, and I asked him, what do I need to know to communicate with the trees? And he was very matter-of-fact about it. You know, everybody knows. This is what you do, and this is how they will let you know that they're communicating with you. And one of the things he taught me was that the leaves will rustle in response, that the wind is the voice of the trees. And at one point, I was thanking a tree that was planted as a memorial for my father when he died.
Yes.
And sitting there and say, you don't know my dad, so I'm going to give you a brain dump of who he was, and just open my heart and gave him an experience of my father. And the wind shifted 90 degrees, so it was now blowing towards us, and it blew the tree over so that it bowed to us.
Wow.
So the communication can be profoundly physical.
It can be profoundly physical. It really can. Yeah, it really, really can.
And the people that have not had any of those experiences don't know how to process it.
No, they don't know how to process it. I think it's written in the Christian Bible, ears to hear, eyes to see. You've got to have an awareness of it. And I think often it's been my experience that those that don't open up to it, or at least acknowledge it, that this can happen, and it's based on fear.
Yes.
Yes, it's based on fear, and once you don't fear the process, then you're opening doors for your wonderful things to happen in your life.
Right. Well, yeah. People seem to forget that Jesus also said, "All that I can do and more, you can do."
They do forget that.
He was basically saying, "I'm going to demonstrate to you this amazing way to be in the world."
Yes.
And offer it to you, and then you can run with it. And instead, everybody pointed at him and said, "You're special," and missed the point that he was teaching how to do what he was demonstrating.
After my experiences, I went back and read that renewed, and got that meaning out of it. But I had to have my experiences first.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because without an inkling about it, it's like a lot of the translation errors from Aramaic and Hebrew to Greek. They looked at it from their cultural perspective and said, what could this possibly mean, without understanding both the cultural perspective and the puns and the, you know, the Middle Eastern languages are really complex, especially the mystical versions. And they missed half of it. they put things in the future because there was no tense that was all time at the same time,
and
which is how most of the stuff was written.
And I think that I read one time where Aramaic does not have pronouns. So you have sort of had to write, if you were translating, you had to write what you think they were saying. So I've always looked deeper and between the lines.
Right, right. The question of who was speaking and what they were saying, when were they speaking and what were they speaking about? Was it now or in the future? And if you look at everything that was said as being now in a moment of now that never ends, as opposed to it'll happen in the future, just stay with it, it'll happen in the future, completely changes the whole perspective. It really got changed in many profound ways when it translated to Greek, and then again when the many translations in English.
Yeah, so, there really are. Yeah.
Yeah. My thing is, what did he say? I don't care what anybody else said along the way, and you know what Paul wrote in his, and all.
That's right.
They didn't even know him. They wrote hundreds of years later. What did he say? And if we can find it in Aramaic and confirm it with two or three different versions of the scriptures, that's what I want to know.
I feel it exactly the same way.
Because he was the mystic who was teaching.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way. As a writer, you realize anything that is written from the perspective of the person who is writing. That doesn't mean they are wrong. It's as they see it, as they can understand it. For instance, if when I first started the automatic writing, if I had tried to get under the tree or get in nature and listen to the stream talk to me, I would not have understood it without going through a growth process.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, although as an empath, you would have felt it.
As an empath, I would have felt it. Yeah.
If you were open to it.
Oh, yes,
but
I would have felt it.
It's that interface between feeling it and knowing that there is a communication, and then being able to turn it into words in some form.
That's right.
Into some other form of communication.
That's right. I laugh these days. I asked myself the other day, it's been a while since I've done any of these, and I asked myself the other day, could I still do it? And I guess I asked God.
Of course you can.
Of course I can. But I wondered. I don't need it like I did, you know.
Right.
But I sat down, so not long after that, I sat down and journaled about something I needed to understand, but writing moved things from the trauma section of the brain into the analytical part. And once you see your own writing, then you can talk to someone about it. And that's scientifically proven. But I sat there and I was writing in first person, you know, I this and I that. And the next thing I toward the end, and I just kind of zoned out toward the end, I went back and read what I had written. It was you.
It right.
Was in second person.
Right.
So spirit, what moved, just right in and solved my dilemma right through my handwriting again.
Well, and that piece of science about moving the emotions into another part of the brain by writing.
Yes.
That's been used for deprogramming people that were mind controlled. If they talked about
that.
It, they never got out. But if they wrote it down, they could get out of the programming.
I knew it had been used for people that had physical traumas like rape and that type thing.
Well, all of that includes physical trauma is one of the ways that they break them to do the mind control. But yeah, it was, as I read several things about how it was done and how people got themselves out of it, that writing process came up several times.
That's interesting, isn't it? How was that not discovered 200 years ago?
Well, it's also horrific that we even have to know about this stuff because of things like mind controls. Like
that's the truth. It's hard even for me to even talk about that type of thing.
Yeah.
But yes, it is. It's very, very hard to know.
Yeah.
They're trying it with cancer patients now.
Yes.
And having great success.
Yes, because so much of what goes on in the physical body is things that is emotions held in the subconscious that you can't verbalize.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's one of the benefits of journaling. I'm an avid journaler. I just write it down, reread it, and save it if you want to. Get rid of it if you want to. It really doesn't matter. But it's nice to be able to save them for years and go look back where you were, and then you can say, oh, I'm not there anymore. That's nice. Give yourself a little pat on the back and then chop wood and carry water again.
Right. Yeah, it's there are so many people that live in the pain of their past.
That's right.
Instead of being able to look it in the face and go, yeah, that happened and that was terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. There's
actually a healing method in almost all shamanic traditions that's called soul retrieval.
Yes.
And that idea is that at some point there was an event that was so emotionally overwhelming that you couldn't process it. And what you did was took part of your energy, part of your soul, and just left it there.
Yes.
So that, you know, the problem is it's still sitting there yelling at you. It's still terrible over here. You're not done with this.
I experienced a different form of that. It was, I didn't know what to call it except soul retrieval. Mm-hmm. I have experienced a little bit of a lot of different types of shamanic experiences and intuitive experiences. But it was during meditation. It wasn't while I was asleep. It was a dreamlike state, but I was not fully asleep. I see a small child. This was not long after I went to Auschwitz. I see a small child, and I know it's World War II. How do I know that? I don't know how I know that. I know that. But his small child, and he's dressed up, and he's scared, and he's hiding, and he's waiting for his mom and to come get him, and I don't know that at first, but I, as the dreamer, ask him what he's waiting for, and he said, I'm waiting for my mom, and then I'm aware that an angel comes in the essence of his mom and says, come with me, and we'll leave. We'll go to a special place, and in the meditation, I sort of followed them, and I went, and they were at a park. Well, I did not know the Monroe man, or Robert Monroe, I believe, has written several books about this type thing. And so I was reading that the park is a special place for, you know, for people on the other side who go and heal from different things and get their defragment, you know, soul experiences, and get whole again, and before they move on. But it was quite an interesting experience. I had to find somebody that could explain to me what happened. It was a form of soul retrieval.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it's because those experiences are not only painful, but so profoundly confusing because they're inhuman. How could anybody do this thing? So you can't even process it.
Yes.
But yeah, I've done some work, remote work on the camps, and there's still work to do. 70 years later, with all the people that have done healing work on it, there is still work to do.
I went to 3 of the concentration camps when I was living back and traveling back and forth from Europe to the United States. And the first was Auschwitz, and as an empath, it was hard. But it did not blow me away, except for one building. And I couldn't even go near that building. But then as we, my traveling companion and I were leaving, a man just appeared from nowhere and said, you need to go to Birkenau. I'd never heard of Birkenau. I didn't know it was like a mile and a half down the road.
Right.
And David, I lost it at Birkenau. Well, I felt like there'd been a lot of work that had been done at Auschwitz from people trying to, helping to heal that area and the land. The land is, it holds energies just like we do.
Right. And the size of that particular camp, of several of the camps, is so big that most people have no idea.
It is unbelievable.
It's incredibly large. Goes to the horizon. It's crazy.
It does. It is unbelievable. And I thought, how many millions of people will it take with positive intentions to heal that land? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really don't know. But it's very, it's still very, very much weeping and telling its horror stories.
Yeah, and the other thing people don't know is how many camps there were. There were
hundreds
of camps.
There were. There were. I only know of three.
There were only a few that were that large, but there were.
Yeah.
And not just concentration camps. There were slave labor camps. There were all kinds of. It was just crazy.
I don't think people realize when things happen, even on a small scale, the earth holds the energies of what we as humans create.
Yes.
And I don't think that's as well known as it could be.
Right. And that's the reason that battlegrounds are places that people go and are overwhelmed with emotion. It's why various kinds of pain recur in the same places, because the energy was anchored there by something that happened a long time ago.
That's right.
Have places all over the world now where that kind of stuff is going on, places in Africa and North Africa and the Middle East.
Yes. And the earth will hold these energies until people with a higher consciousness are able to go in and help the earth heal.
Right, right. And a lot of people are working on it as it's happening, which is crazy intense work.
It is. It really is. You know, this book that I've written, The Making of a Mystic, this is the book that I absolutely had 100% ironclad intentions never to publish. Oh, yeah, I know. The other side is just laughing. And I am, too. How one can do it?
Do you know the Yiddish proverb that says, man plans, God laughs?
I had not heard that one, but I do like it. I think I'll write it down and put it on the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what happened. I had about four or five of these writings in different forms in my first book, a memoir I had written when life cried out. And I was having trouble finishing the memoir, so I went to a writer's conference and got very discouraged, because the first person said, if you're writing a memoir, it'll never do anything and you're just wasting your time. And half the audience there was just deflated. It was really an unfortunate thing for somebody to have said to everybody. But anyway, that night I felt like I'd been punched in the gut, and I needed, I wasn't going to finish. I was done. You know, I thought, well, it just wasn't meant to be. And so one thing, spirit's laughing, I said, oh, yeah, you're going to finish it. So I was trying to find something in a vending machine to kill the savage beast that had moved into my solar plexus. And I went to like three different vending machines on three floors, and I couldn't find them. Anything, the vending machines were not working. I was being led. I didn't realize that. Finally, I went to the main desk, and there was a vending machine there, and the lady had gone into the back to get a key to open it up. There was a man standing there, and he said, so what are you writing? He had a conference badge on, too, and I said, the Forever Memoir, but I don't think I'm going to be finishing it. And just to be polite, I said, and what do you do? He said, well, I'm a memoir editor, and I help people finish their forever memoirs.
You know? I love when that happens.
Yeah. And then after he started helping me with the editing, he called one day, and he said, how many of these spiritual question and answer writings have you got? I said, oh, I don't know, 125, 150. And there was a pause at the other end of the phone. He said, start putting them together. That's your book.
That's right. That's right.
So, yeah. Spirit was laughing.
It's already written.
It's already written. Just put it together.
Yeah. It's amazing how all of this unfolds and people show up and say the strangest things. And my response usually is, oh, it's one of those days today? Okay,
like,
where is my life going now?
I love it. I love that response. It's very good. I read
it's been,
one time.
It's been going on for decades. So.
Oh, yeah. God laughs when you make your plans.
Right. Right. The other thing I always say is the only straight lines are man-made. There are no straight lines in nature. Everything is curved and curls back on itself.
Yeah, for so long I had been trying to organize my business life by the Western, the Western plan. Set a goal, go in there and do it. My life takes a zigzag pattern.
right. It's convoluted. It goes here, it goes there. It's all these things that you needed to do so you'd be ready for what you said you wanted to do.
Right.
You didn't know you had to do all this other stuff.
On my counter here, I have what I call my God box. And I never open it except to put something in it. So far, it hadn't filled up. But if there's some problem in my life that I really want to solve, I want to solve the problem, I will mention what the problem is, but I will not write what I need the solution to be.
Right.
I just want the problem solved in some way that's helpful or beneficial, et cetera, et cetera. And so whatever it is, I will write it down and I will put it in the gun box and I will close it and it's done. I consider it done. And it's really surprising. It's like setting an intention, but I don't have to do the how. The how comes in ways that, as you know, as a shaman, it comes in ways that you never could imagine. So much better than you ever thought.
Well, and from the perspective of traditions where you create rituals and altars to focus the energy for a specific thing, what you did is create a little ritual and a little altar where you put stuff so that it can be handled by spirit.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
It's a very time-honored way of doing that kind of thing. You do all the fussing that you're going to do, and then you say, okay, here, now you take it.
So, right. Yeah. And it comes in better ways than I ever thought could happen.
In ways that you have to laugh at.
Well, you have to laugh at.
Because they have a great sense of humor.
Yeah, well, gee, I never thought of it that way.
So we're running out of time, and obviously we could just keep chatting for another hour, but that's usually how it is. Again, my guest is Patty Fivette, and her book is The Making of a Mystic, Writing as a Form of Spiritual Emergence. Please give everybody your web address again.
It's PattyFivette.com, P-A-D-D-Y, D as in daddy, P-A-D-D-Y, F-I-E-V-E-T.com.
Fantastic. Patty, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been absolutely delightful, and the book
is wonderful. Thank you, David. I thoroughly have enjoyed it.
And so glad that we connected.
I am too. This has been wonderful.
And if you want to hang on for a little bit until after we can chat after we go off the air.
Okay, I will.
Excellent. So, again, my guest tonight has been Patty Fivette, PhD. We never mentioned that. Her book is The Making of a Mystic, and check it out. It's quite wonderful. And if you got at all curious about this strange guy, David, who does the show, you can go to househealing.com. And cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every conceivable way I could think of for you to contact me, including a scheduling link. I do a free 20-minute assessment of whatever is going on with a person, place, situation, whatever it may be, and we can see whether my work will be helpful to you. For more about the show, go to thefarkasfiles.com. And Empower Radio started 6 years ago, and I've been doing this show for 4.5 years, so there are a lot of interviews there, so enjoy them. And if you enjoy my show and the other shows on Empower Radio, and you may not know that Empower Radio is 24/7 positive, uplifting, and spiritual programming every day, 24 hours a day. And it's all being done by a small group of people. And at this turning point, it's time to upgrade all the equipment and take some steps to go worldwide in a more powerful way and have the ability to touch more people's lives. And to do that, we've started an Indiegogo crowdsourcing fundraising website. So please, like public radio asks you to help out because you enjoy the shows. If you're enjoying the shows here on Empower Radio, please go to empowerradio.com, find the link for the Indiegogo website, and give what you can. Help us out so we can continue providing all this coverage, all these programs. For example, my show is on at 9 p.m. every night. There's one of the shows from the archives, and there is a live recording on the air on Thursday nights. So you can listen to my show all the time. Kind of scary. So please, if you like it, give us a little bit of help. So that's our show for this evening. Thank you, one and all, for being with us. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.